Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
Well, today we have a great guest. His name's Pradeep Singha. I think I just butchered it again.
That's okay.
And he is all about holistic coaching, business, and the work-life balance and what to look for as a high-performing entrepreneur and businessman. Here he is, Pradeep.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
So we had the conversation a little bit earlier, but can you go in and again explain to the audience what you do?
Yeah, sure. So long story short, I'm an entrepreneur. I have multiple businesses, but one of the businesses that I'm really passionate about is the consulting and the coaching side, which is really helping entrepreneurs, mainly particularly men, businessmen who are professional CEOs, entrepreneurs, and executives who really want to have success in all areas of their life. So not just one, which most guys are aiming towards success in their business or their career, but then they're challenged in their personal relationship or as a family man, as a father, and even having that personal happiness. So the coaching that we do within our organization is helping men perform, achieve, and be fulfilled in all areas of their life, from business to relationships to parenting.
Awesome. Yeah, that's because it's as I've read this book called Thinking Fast and Slow. Have you read it recently? Mm-hmm. And that's one of them say, like, if one part of your life goes down, everything goes down.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, exactly. And that's why it's from a holistic perspective, because when you have, it's never perfectly balanced, but when you have energy that is at a high level in all aspects of your life, in your relationship, and when I mean energy, I mean positive energy, mm-hmm. in your relationship or as a father, then it actually fuels you in your business. So it's like a cycle. And if you just have one area that's working properly and the other two aren't, then you're actually going to be performing less in all areas of life.
Yes. No, because you'll be wanting to patch the hole, but then you're giving less to the business or your family kind of thing, or you mm-hmm. just neglect them completely.
Absolutely.
So going into a little bit of the consulting, what would be, let's say, I'm not, but I'm a CEO, I'm having trouble with my family. How would you go about approaching me and helping me out?
Well, the first thing to do is really figure out what the end goal is or outcome that the individual wants to have, because everybody has a different outcome that they're looking for in life. And we all talk about, we want success, we want money, we want this, but it's really truly defining what that looks like for each person. And so it's typically it's outlining what their ideal vision looks like for their life in a few years. For some CEOs, it's working 5 days a week. For other CEOs, it's working 7 days a week. For others, it's working 2 days a week, whatever that looks like for that individual. And then what kind of relationship they want to have with their spouse and with their kids. You know, do they want to be around their kids more often? Do they want to be able to take more family vacations? All these kinds of things has to play. It's kind of starting with the end in mind and then working backwards and saying, okay, well, this is a lifestyle that you want. And then let's work backwards and say, what kind of business or career is going to support that? And then determining where that individual is falling short on, let's just say, the relationship side. And a lot of the times, maybe they're spending too much time in their business and not enough in their relationship, not enough energy that's put there. Maybe they just need to have better skills and communication. So it's just mm-hmm. identifying where their biggest challenges are and then overcoming them. The approach that we use is what we call a bottleneck approach, okay. which means that we just tackle the biggest challenge at that particular time. And when we alleviate that big challenge, then some of the other smaller challenges automatically go away. So as we move forward on a weekly basis or on a monthly basis, whatever that looks like, we tackle the biggest challenges. And then ultimately what's left is it's kind of like breaking down the dam. Yeah. And when you break down the dam, all the water starts to flow. And that's the process that we use.
Okay. So then, same analogy earlier, I'm a CEO struggling with my family, but business doing fair. How would you break down the dam for me? How would you point out the picture that, you know, you don't actually work too much or you don't work enough kind of thing?
Well, it's basically identifying, okay, where do they spend their time? Where do they spend their energy? Where are the biggest challenges are? What's the feedback that they're getting from their family members? And ultimately, each guy knows inside of himself where he's kind of lacking. And that's the bit, that's the bigger thing. And then we go into a deeper conversation, because a lot of the times men will say, this is my problem at the surface level. And when we get deeper into it, it becomes even deeper than that. So it really is a very specific, you can say it's a catered approach, where we go down a number of layers deep to find out what the real challenge is. So for you, it might be different than someone else. As I mentioned, it's not a one size fits all approach that we take, because that just doesn't work at the end. When we take a look at what happens, is we identify some key reason for each individual. For some person, it might be their belief system. So one of the things that we do, I take a look at from a process or system perspective is, okay, what are your belief systems? What are your top values? Because if you identify your top values, then you'll be able to determine how you're actually making decisions. That's actually a really big one for guys, because because your value system really determines where you put your energy and your time and your focus. Because if you value career success quite a bit, but you're not valuing spending time with your family as much, then you're going to have a conflict there. And for example, it's as simple as listing out your top 10 values and then prioritizing them to see where they fit. If you have two values that are very similar in position or rank, let's just say you have family at the top and you have making money at the top, let's just say top one and two, well, they're going to conflict in a certain way, because to make more money, you may have to spend a lot more time working. Mm-hmm. And that may take time away from your family. So during that particular time, let's just say someone's starting up a business or starting off their career, there may have to be a conscious understanding that they have to put more time into their career, and family just has to come down slightly. Maybe it's temporarily. Maybe it's just for 6 months. Maybe it's just for a year. And then family has to be brought up again on the value stack or the value level. And then maybe the business and the career has to come down. The challenge is that if you don't outline what your values are and you don't identify them, what ends up happening is you make decisions one way and then you go back and forth, which ends up happening for most guys, is you end up taking three steps forward and then two steps back, and you can't figure out why you're making these decisions. And it really comes down to your values, and updating your values on a consistent basis is important. You may have to update them. I always recommend guys update them at least once a year. And then take a look, and if you can, at least once a quarter, because that will determine how you make decisions going forward.
Yeah, no, the updating every year, that, because it's one of those, if you forget to do it, you could go 5 years. And one thing I've learned, as time goes on, the older you get, the faster time seems to go. So 2 years could seem like 2 days to someone in a higher in age. Yeah, I agree with that. So then you were mentioning on breaking down values, like you said, money and family. Mm-hmm. Are there some clients you've ever encountered, you don't have to drop names, but like they don't even realize, they thought by doing business it was for family?
And absolutely. This is the common, you can say the common theme that a lot of guys have, is that they believe that they're working their butts off, they're making all this money for their family, therefore they're providing for their family. And that's where they think, where their family, for example, if you take a look at the value of what kids want and what a spouse wants, or let's just say in this case, a woman, is not necessarily just money, lifestyle, like a fancy car or a big house.
Right.
It's time. It's quality time.
Yes.
And so it's breaking that down and identifying the level, you know, what does time mean? Because for a man, he may say, I'm doing everything I can for my family. Look, I'm providing, they mean everything to me. But for his kids and his wife, they're saying, no, we just want you to be around more often.
It's literally the paradox. Like, we'd rather be poor but have you around than rich and never see you again.
Yeah. Or this also happens too. There's that struggle where a lot of, and this isn't just wives, this could be husbands too.
Right.
But wives want a great lifestyle, and kids want a great lifestyle where they want all the toys and they want the big home and they want to be able to go on vacations. But then they're complaining that daddy's not around all the time either, because daddy's too busy working. So it's having that expectation on both sides to say what's most important, and let's work together to make that work.
So then for you, because I would assume the consulting advisory area is really competitive and commoditized now, how do you make yourself stand out so big wigs reach out to you?
Well, you know, I don't think it's commoditized yet. It is one of the fastest growing industries in North America. And there's either business coaches or personal development coaches coming up every single day, probably hundreds if not thousands of them every single day, because there's no real regulations or restrictions or certifications that you need to actually get into this industry.
Right.
But I've, over the decades, basically the what differentiates us and the work that I do is I was very specific and I was very intentional in our approach, where I combined business coaching and personal development, personal performance coaching together. I can count on one hand how many people have that expertise in North America at the level that I do, because you can have a business coach, but they may not understand how you make decisions. Because one of the areas that I focus on is in neuroscience and the performance psychology. So I really get in deep in terms of how people operate, their belief systems, in terms of what they're thinking and how we make decisions as human beings and how we operate. So a lot of business coaches don't have that knowledge or expertise or experience. On the personal performance coaching, yes, they may be able to help you make decisions. They may be able to help you have a better mindset, have built better habits, but they don't understand business. So I can have an intellectual conversation on both aspects when I'm coaching a business professional to say, okay, this is what we need to do for your marketing strategy, and then actually coach them in the right direction in terms of how to make the right decisions, how to get the right value system behind it, how to build the right habits. So it's both aspects brought together.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes you sound a lot. It's just what I was trying to go for is that with the age of technology, like you said, everyone and their mother could be an advisor and no one can stop them. Are you more of a social media presence? You're doing like YouTube and stuff like that?
Yeah, we do have a presence and we're pushing that a lot more now. So okay. We do have, I have three different podcasts, for example. That's one of my favorite platforms because I find that. Yeah. So I have the Mindshot podcast with Pradeep Singh. I have the Male Entrepreneur. And then there's a Coaches Council podcast.
Interesting. And
they're all different flavors.
Right.
And they're all for different audiences. But I find that to be a very, impactful channel. We also take some of that when we're recording some of the podcasts and put them onto our YouTube channel. But here's what I do know is that a lot of CEOs, business professionals, owners don't have time to scope social media all the time. But they're open to listening to a podcast because it's audio and they can drive and they can go for walks and actually consume this information. They don't have to be looking at the screen.
Right. No, I've noticed that. Like I've been self-teaching myself business and trading. And there are times like today I read all 6 chapters. I just listen to it while I'm working away at night. And it's the same for them. They can just work away whatever they're doing. If it's not heavy brain thinking stuff, they could just pop you in their ear and just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But if you give them a big manuscript, they're like, God, I need to like set 4 hours aside just to read this thing.
Yeah, people are busy these days, especially the guys that I work with. So I have to be very intentional. I have to be very conscious in terms of how much time they spend where. That's why I'm very much about action and results, because it's about let's get down to the root challenge. Let's figure out an action plan and a strategy, and then let's go ahead and actually go at it and actually get it done.
Yes, that's the whole thing. You got to be where the audience is and where their attention is, and then you set a plan for them. So you were mentioning the finding the root of the problem and marketing and stuff like that. So I'm gathering that you're very good at all aspects of business as a consultant, but it's the marketing that piqued my interest. So how would you say you would approach them for marketing? I'm not going to like, don't drop names, but it's like, do you have big Fortune 500 guys that you talk with their marketing?
Yeah. And marketing can be in a number of different areas. It could be marketing for their departments or marketing for them as an individual, because a CEO, for example, has to be really good at marketing himself. And so, so teaching influence skills, the science of influence, for example, and because of the neuroscience, we're able to take the marketing and make it even more effective, for example, because there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of hearsay when it comes to marketing and what works, what doesn't work. But the brain is very, when you take a look at the science of the brain, it's I'm not going to say simple, but our brain operates a certain way. For example, when we have images on the left side of a web page, it performs better. So images on the left side and text on the right side, because of how our brain operates. Our right hemisphere is more visual and more spatial. And what ends up happening is the right hemisphere gets the information from the left eye, for example.
Right.
And so there's a cross. So if you have an image on the right, it will still be understood, but it's not going to be easily in terms of interpreted. So if you want people to be able to consume the information on your website easier, you want to make sure that you have images on the left and you have text on the right.
That's actually fascinating. I want to go into that in a minute. Sorry, I'm writing a note. So you were talking for the neuroscience. I know what that is, but for someone who's lay and doesn't understand what neuroscience is in the application you're going for, how would you go about explaining it to them?
Well, it's simply how your brain and your nervous system operates and how it responds to the environment. And so for an individual, that means, okay, how do you behave? And how can you perform better? How are your thoughts aligned with your emotional aspects? So how do you deal with a situation? How do you make decisions, for example? What parts of your brain lights up when you're in certain situations, whether it's a stressful situation or a positive situation? But we also take that approach and we use that for how consumers react, for example, and how marketing can be impacted. Because as I mentioned before, just simple things in terms of how the brain works can help you actually take your strategies and your business a lot further. So here's another prime example. If you give individuals too many choices, if you give them 5 choices, it may not be as good for your business as to 3 choices. If you go to a Costco, for example, they're very specific in terms of what they carry, but they only typically have 1 brand, maybe 2 of 1 particular item. Let's just say ketchup. And the reason for that is they want people to go in and just pick that up and take it. They don't want people to be humming and hawing between, should I take this brand or should I take this brand? They just want people to buy. So they give you a choice of a reputable brand, knowing that if you give too many choices, it will actually stop your brain, or your brain will actually be less chances of them actually buying anything at all. So these are the things that we take into consideration.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I notice, at least for Costco, it's usually like Heinz and then they're like store brand. That's it. That's all you get. So it's like you get the dollar more, the dollar less. Probably the same thing. You just choose whichever one you prefer.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you had more choices, you may not even take any of them. And that's what they've noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, limiting in isolated situations is a very good thing. So back to the picture on the left and text on the right. Where did you come across that in your studies and how that worked?
Oh, well, we have a research team. So every year we have roughly about 20 interns that we work with that are specifically for research. So we have a team that, and so they bring the research to us. And so this is, I wouldn't say common sense now, but this is well-known knowledge now in neuroscience when it comes to the right hemisphere is more spatial and the left one is more language-based and more routine-based. And this is now interpreted from a marketing perspective. So it's out there in neuroscience journals quite a bit.
Well, that's a thick read. I don't have time to go through that. Yeah. If there was a podcast, I'd listen to it. But I was super interested in neuroscience back in college, but the teacher was crazy. So I left. I don't know if that was a test or whatever, but so I kind of get where you're going for, but I didn't learn all the nuances. So you're saying there's other things like left. So I know the whole left hemisphere is the logical thinker. And the right is the more creative. Is that true or false with nowadays data?
Well, there's some truth to that, and it's not as easy as that. So a lot of the stuff that we read these days in books is based on old knowledge, for example, and there's a lot of new research that's come about, or it just sounds great. Yes, the right hemisphere is more responsible for spatial and visual recognition, for example, and that comes with creativity, but also what we call with newer information. Let's just say it's more creative information is processed on the right hand side. Left is, yes, more language based and more routine based, which means that if you're in a routine, it's more based on your in your left hemisphere. But that doesn't mean they're independent. They actually work very closely together. And I don't think you can be creative without your left hemisphere, because even creativity, for example, has a lot to do with setting boundaries, right? And identifying patterns. All these kinds of things require both hemispheres. So it's not quite accurate to say one is just this way and the other one is just this way, because they do work hand in hand. There's a what they call the global coherence theory, which has come about over the last couple of decades, which is really about the experiences that you have in your brain are not localized, which means that there are so many different connections without your brain for even every single interaction or experience that we have, that scientists are now saying that you can't localize anything anymore. You can't just say it's in the right or in the left because it touches many other parts of your brain. Yes, there may be more activity in this area, but guaranteed it's going to touch almost every other part of your brain.
I agree. Yeah, it's like a lightning bolt. It can strike in a similar pattern, but it fractures off, and then it fractures off again to get to whatever point.
Yeah, exactly. And what they relate it to is almost like dropping a water in a pond, is that those ripple effects, those waves will go throughout the entire pond. Some areas might be more, some areas it's less, but it still impacts the entire pond.
Yes. Yeah. And it's amazing how thoroughly connected our mind is to our body. Like, we all like, oh, we have nerves, that's why we don't bite your finger off kind of thing. But it's like, because I do martial arts, I realize this, my muscles, it might also be mental, but it feels like my muscles remember certain movements, but just by the simple gesture, like the nerves then fire, then my mind remembers it kind of thing.
Yeah. And muscle memory. And what that does is your body and your mind are just connecting there, and you're placing that. And a lot of the times we call that, that could be placed in procedural memory, for example, which means that you can do things without your conscious mind even knowing. It's like riding a bike, right? Your martial arts eventually becomes riding a bike. Where you can kick, you can punch, you can block, you can do all these things based on reflex, because you have it down packed and it's all memorized in your brain.
Yeah. And it's speaking of procedural, there was one point I was having trouble. I was really tired, but I just went to fighting class, and essentially I didn't realize this. I was asleep during the whole class, like mentally asleep. I was physically awake, and I was apparently, it was my best because I wasn't even stressed out, but it was my muscle memory, okay, they're coming here and just block them. And my instructor pulled me aside, he's like, whatever you did, do that again. I'm like, I don't know how I did that.
Well, you know what it is? It's basically you're operating at your non-conscious level. And this is what we call, we actually just started a project here. It's called the Complete Zone. So this is something that I tripped upon when I was a lot younger. So back in elementary school, my teacher, there was a substitute teacher that came to our school. I think it was in grade, I don't know if it was 5, 6, or 7, but he wrote a bunch of words on the chalkboard, circled them, and then connected them with lines and said, this is a mind map. And that was the first time I ever heard of it. And it was the last time I ever heard of it throughout high school. And they don't teach this. They might teach it now, but they never taught that when I was going to school at that time. That was 30 years ago. And I was fascinated by it. And I was like, what's going on here? And so I went and I actually started to study. And at that time, people didn't really talk about neuroscience. It wasn't very popular. Cool. Yeah. It was more brain science, brain skills, brain training. So I learned how to speed read, memorize, how to perform better, for example, all those things that you talked about, and apply it to sports. I could go into a test and score 100% without studying. I can memorize a 500-page textbook word for word. And I use these because I use the elements of how you can use your brain to your advantage. And what you just talked about is one of the areas of being able to go into your non-conscious part of your brain, because all that information is there. What ends up happening is that in most day-to-day life, for example, we have a lot of stress. And we're constantly thinking about different things. And your conscious thought then conflicts with your non-conscious. And so something that's memorized in your non-conscious, for example, in your procedural memory, like blocks and kicks in your martial arts, if you just shut that stress part off from your brain is going to continue to operate just as good, because it's your non-conscious that's operating. And your non-conscious, here's what scientists do know, is that the majority of processing that happens within our brain, and they don't have an exact figure, but the estimate is roughly over 90% of the, let's just say, the activity that happens in your brain is at the non-conscious level. And yes. So that's very powerful when you think about it, because your brain is operating on all these different, let's just say, circuits and networks without you even being aware of what's happening. So your conscious brain has, honestly, it has a lot to do with your conscious day-to-day stuff. But in a way, it doesn't, because you just shared an example where you could just go in and be completely sleepy and still perform well. I'll give a personal example where I was learning the guitar, and this was about 6 years ago. And I was learning this new riff, and my guitar teacher was just like, yeah, you don't do this. And I just couldn't get it. And I was just like, oh, man, because I'm a very tactical and a very procedural type of person. And then what ended up happening was him and I just started to spark a conversation. And as him and I were talking, I was playing it. And after a few minutes, he stopped and he said, what did you just do? I said, what do you mean? He's like, you just played it. He's like, you didn't even realize it, but you just played it because you're preoccupied. And so that comes back to how the brain works in neuroscience, because it's so fascinating when you're able to leverage it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed this in general through weird events through my life. It's just because I too am a very tactile learner. I prefer to do it and then hear it. If I have to, then see it, kind of thing. And that's the one thing I've noticed as I've like trying to get better at my current job. They just show me, but they never explain it. They never let me do it, kind of thing. And I've told them, like, this is how I learn. You have to let me do it. And if you have to give me terrible words while I'm doing it, like, you're an idiot, fine, that's not going to hurt my feelings, but you have to let me do it. Mm-hmm. And that's where recently I'm in a conflict with them, but I think it might resolve now. But yeah, that's the same thing. It's like, there was one time the lady was completely gone. I just did it, and I'm talking to a fellow coworker. That was the best work I ever did, and I still don't know how to replicate it.
Well, I think that the school system is actually a very old and hasn't caught up, and employers haven't caught up either. No. To really realize how learning actually happens, because everybody learns differently. And I've been fortunate enough and lucky enough to be able to put my kids in Montessori school for that very reason, because they teach based on real principles of how kids learn. It's very tactical. It's very based on their own personal interests. So they allow the children to learn based on their own terms, which is the best way you can, because everybody learns differently. In the employment space, in the career space, employers just don't understand that adult education needs to be brought in to say, this is how people learn. They all learn differently, and you have to take different approaches.
I have to agree. When I was going to college, this one younger college professor, I was 24 at the time. He was 34. God, he was almost my age. Essentially, he philosophy. So it was already a touchy-feely subject. But he kind of – first thing he did – is he said, okay, we're all in college, so you might know what I'm about to say. Who here's a visual learner? If I write something, you will remember this forever. A couple raised their hand. He said, okay, if I just told you the orders, are you going to remember it? And they're like, yes. He said, but who has to write the word? And like half of the class raised it. He's like, okay, so every 10 minutes, you're allowed to leave, take a quick walk, smoke break if you want, then come back. That was the best class. I learned so much.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when teachers actually apply principles, the students actually respond.
Yeah, and it was just because it was college. We're all a bunch of angsty kids. That's where he's like, if you want to smoke, go for it, kind of thing. He's like, make it quick. You got like 4 minutes, kind of thing.
Well, there's a lot of research that's come out now. If they said that there's an ideal learning institution in college or even for teenage years, for example, school would start at 10 o'clock. Because the brain is still trying to develop up until about 19 or 20 years old, and it needs that rest time. And so starting at 8:30, for example, isn't ideal for kids. Scientists have talked about, if you're actually going to have the best learning environment, it should be a little bit later.
Yes. No, I agree. Just before, but not after lunch, because then you got that push to get to lunch, eat your lunch. But then you're full and you're happy and you can keep going, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Or it depends on your diet too, because your diet has a big impact. You can eat foods that actually put you in a different, like a food coma, for example, if it spikes your insulin, which is also going to impact your cognitive abilities.
Yes. Okay. So I want to go into that real quick, because I was doing keto, which just recently it's been hard to find good food. So what's your, for the neural pathways in the brain and the remembering, what diets do you recommend your clients if they have like the standard American diet kind of thing?
Well, You know, I always say talk to your physician and talk to a dietitian if you're interested in this. This isn't my area of expertise. My wife is actually a nurse practitioner who specializes in functional medicine, for example, and she is like a biohacker. So she is the one that tells me what to eat. I have a biochemistry background, and I used to be a personal trainer at 17. So I'm fairly aware of what foods do, for example, but she has a specialized knowledge. So she'll tell me. So for example, I'll tell you my routine.
Okay.
I fast, and I typically, and I don't recommend this to everybody, I fast for 16 hours every single day, because what that does is it allows you to A, burn more fat, but B, it also allows you to build more stem cells and also clear out the cells that are not functioning properly, which means that you're getting rid of the waste. Because when you actually eat food, what ends up happening is it actually consumes a lot of energy to break down that food.
It does.
And so you have to be eating nutrient-rich food to be able to afford to be able to eat food, for example. And so whenever someone eats junk food, it's actually a waste, because you're spending more energy trying to break it down than the actual benefits, than the nutrients you're actually getting. Yeah, you may get more calories, but you're not getting the vitamins and the minerals that you may need. So nuts, for example, are very important for a proper diet. Dark chocolate, and this is something that I eat quite a bit on a daily basis, has helped to increase stem cells, but also brain performance, for example. Okay. Blueberries is another one. For men in general, pomegranate juice, it helps with testosterone. The studies have shown that it can help boost testosterone, for example.
Interesting.
And which is important for men. What else? So kiwi helps replenish your gut flora, which is the bacteria in your gut. And it's been shown now your enteric system, which is your gut system, is considered to be a third brain. For example, you have the brain in your head, which is your cognitive brain. People consider the heart as a brain, as a second brain, for example, because it has its own intelligence. And now scientists over the last decade have talked about the gut brain, the enteric brain, which is a lot of the health, especially in the immune health that we have, the ability to fight off disease and be healthy, comes from our gut, because we have literally trillions of bacteria in our gut. And so keeping that healthy will actually make you perform better. So it's an important thing to pay attention to. So those are the types of foods, like omega-3 rich foods are important for your brain function. MCT oil, which is a modified medium chain triglycerides, which basically is a form of fat that is used by your brain cells, for example. These are different foods that you can take a look at to improve your health. And if anybody wants to take a look into that, I always recommend Dave Asprey. He's the bulletproof guy. He's probably one of the world-renowned guys when it comes to biohacking and talking about specific foods and nutrients for that.
So then I want to go into something specific. It's something I've noticed is sugar on the mind.
Sugar? Yeah.
So, sorry, you continue.
Yeah, so sugar is a challenging one. So glucose is needed by our brain, not necessarily our neurons, but our glial cells, which are cells in our brain that actually there's more glial cells in our brain than there are neurons. So neurons are the ones that actually fire the electrical pulses, you can say, and there's about 86 billion in our brain. There's about 10 times more glial cells. And glial cells are the ones that are more chemically oriented, and they're there to take care of your brain. They filter your brain out. They take care of, like, they're helper cells. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
And they take glucose. That's what they take as a fuel source. But you have to take proper glucose, for example. So, you know, anything that, so for example, berries, right? When we talk about berries, it's important because they are lower on the glycemic index, and that means that you're not going to have a spike in your insulin. When you take a lot of sugar and it spikes your insulin, that's where you get fat retention, for example. And there's a lot more that's been shown with that when it comes to, but what you're trying to do is you're trying to eat foods that give you carbohydrates, but don't spike your sugar, your insulin levels. And so you can find that on a glycemic index, for example, and find those types of foods like berries, for example. Anything that's processed, has been shown to be higher on the glycemic index, like pastas, for example, bread, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've noticed. It's just, it's a very weird experiment. I was super hardcore. I was eating proper berries, MCT oil, but just to see, because it's like I was doing good for like 2 months. I'm like, I wonder if I just switch for 2 weeks, what the damage is going to be. And it's insane how processed foods are just messing me up. I'm going back to the other one now.
Yeah, and it does. And I actually, I do this because I fast. The way I fast is I fast till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, okay. Some, between noon and 2 o'clock, because I know when I eat, and I eat healthy, mm-hmm. it automatically takes my cognitive energy away, even though I'm eating super healthy. So I know that when I'm during a fast, I'm actually performing and thinking at my best.
Right.
It's really interesting. But every person is different. Every person operates differently. And I think my suggestion is that you try and you test what works for you.
And I've noticed for me, at least for me, I know a high carb diet is not good for me kind of thing. So I will be switching. I will personally be switching back to the other after tomorrow because I have a family event. So,
yeah. I mean, so, that, you know, a high carb diets, I think that what they've shown is unless you're like a bodybuilder, or like an athlete that's running like marathons and or decathlons and stuff like that, it's not good for you. The ideal diet that people have talked about, again, best to talk to a nutritionalist, mm-hmm. is the Mediterranean diet.
Yes, actually, I've had a doctor recommend that to me. But the funny part is why I was starting keto. I was looking into it. I actually follow a guy named Vinny Torlich. He does no sugars, no grains.
Okay.
Essentially keto, but little bit more strict on what you can eat, because keto, if you so much carbs, you can have like half a slice of bread kind of thing.
Yeah, and I don't know, I used to do that quite a bit too, but what you know, again, based on what I personally take a look at, is you have to be able to feed your gut proper nutrients, and you taking in those berries, for example, are important, because when you don't give them the nutrients, then what ends up happening is those bacteria can't break down the food in your gut. And so the stuff that you're taking in, you're not processing effectively anyways. So I've taken myself off, personally off a keto diet and more towards a lower carb diet, but responsible carbs that actually feed my gut.
Okay. Yeah, then I will look into that more personally on my own time. So you touched on earlier that your perception of schools on failure to teach kids correctly. Can we go into a little more detail of that?
Well, schools aren't built to help you be successful. Schools are designed to make you into a good worker. That's what schools are designed to do.
Yeah.
Because it's meant to basically promote the economy. So I don't promote that whatsoever. And I've seen this because my academic background in a lot of ways. So I have an MBA in innovation. So I'm very much about creativity, because I believe that creativity is the fundamental basics of A, business and life, because we all face challenges. We all come up with these obstacles. And if you don't have the ability to be innovative, then you're going to be stuck. Right. But if you come up with ideas and different ways of doing things to overcome your challenges, then you're going to be better off. Right. And so school doesn't teach you that. In fact, what they do is they take that away from you. They teach you to think very rigidly. That's, again, why I have my kids in Montessori, because I want their creativity and their imagination is the most important thing that you can foster in a kid or a growing adult, for example, because this is a classic study that was done by NASA years ago, where they followed kids from the age of 2 to in their 20s, and I think even to the 30s, where they took a look at the creativity levels, and it went from, let's just say, being in the 90s when they were a lot younger to being at 2% when they became adults. Mm-hmm. So it's literally taught out of us. So we're taught to be less creative as individuals. And I think that's important. The school system doesn't teach you important skills like financial management. They're starting to teach that a little bit now, but how do you be? So financial literacy wasn't even talked about when I went to school. There is a little bit more now where how do you manage your finances, right? How do you become, let's just say, wealthy? They don't teach you that in school.
No.
How to have better relationships. They don't have teach you that marriage skills. They don't teach you that at school. They don't teach you how to live to your full potential. How do you utilize your mindset, for example? All of these things when it comes to human potential, they don't even touch in high school, because that's not what schools are designed to do. And a lot of teachers know this. A lot of teachers talk about this. And a lot of teachers are fed up with the school system knowing this. But again, it's about promoting the economy.
Yeah, I've actually had a principal on, and he said the same thing. He expressed the same thing. He's like, I want the teachers to teach him this, but we also have to do a certain test. And if they don't meet the test, then we lose funding.
Yeah. Well, you know, a simple thing like how they teach kids to read. The traditional school system doesn't do it properly. The Montessori school does. Like my kids, for example, at the beginning, and this was really weird to me, and I didn't realize it until I actually looked up the neuroscience behind it, is in Montessori, they don't teach you the letters. They teach you the sounds of the letters first. So the phonology is what they call it.
Okay.
So it would be a, b, k, d, e.
Right.
And I was like, what are my kids doing? They're not talking about the alphabet. They're just making these bunch of noises. But that's a better way to teach your kids how to read, because the sound of the letter is actually more important than the letter itself until they're fluent in reading, which was really interesting. I didn't realize this. So they've shown this through studies and studies that if you take two kids, one where it's based on the sound of the letter versus the actual letter of it's the word of the letter, let's just say C, pronouncing the C, the kid who's sounding out how the C sounds, so the K, is actually going to read better over time.
That's so interesting, actually.
Yeah. And so this is the stuff that is shown through neuroscience, through studies, but the school systems reject it. The school boards reject it.
Interesting. Yeah, so one thing because my coworkers, they're trying to get their kid into a good school and all that, but they're like, we're going from one public school to another. I'm like, guys, this is some deep shit. This has been rigged like since 120 years ago with Rockefeller and Edison and all them. They were the ones that actually started that Board of Education. So they're the ones that rigged it. I'm like, this has been in motion for too long. There's no stopping it now, kind of thing.
Yeah, because it's literally impacting hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah, because that's where one of them was like, oh, I'm moving it from like District 1 to District 2. It's better. I'm like, it's the same thing. Just so you know, it's been in motion for like 120 years.
Well, that's why I always encourage parents to teach at home as well and be vigilant in teaching at home, because school does teach your kids certain things. They will teach your kids discipline, how to socialize, but your kids get socialized at school. And there are good things that they will teach kids, like the topics are important, like history and stuff like that. But you still have to take ownership of your kid's development. It's a tough one. It is a tough one, because most parents, and this isn't a negative, this isn't a cut down, but just aren't educated themselves in terms of, okay, what is a good education? Because anybody can learn a subject, but here's one thing they don't teach you in school. They don't teach you how to learn.
No, they don't. No.
They don't teach, which it's really interesting you think about that. So the reason why I was able to go in and get 100% on tests and all, everybody else in the school is like, I had a call, like they said, that's not normal. It's because I learned how to learn, right? I specifically went out there and learned how to learn, which gave me a massive advantage even till this day over most people, because most people still don't know, even their later years, how to learn something.
And then after their attempt for college and all that, they just don't care. They're here to work now. So would you say the learning how to learn was the start with the mind map?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 110%. I think that is something that just shaped my entire life. That one instance of learning that drove me on a path that just led me to where I am today.
So then off the top of your head, what books or articles did you read to help you perfect your mind mapping?
At that time, so we're talking about over 20 something years ago, so these books were books from the library. I can't even honestly let you know which ones they are, because at that time internet wasn't readily available,
right?
So this is stuff that was there was a gentleman, let me just see, I'm looking at my shelf here, There was a gentleman, I wish I could remember his name, that was actually very well known at that time, that talked about mind maps in detail. And he was actually from the UK. He was from England. And so they were a little bit more advanced in this area. And so I remember when I was in, this is probably when I was even in the corporate world, when this organization was one of the first companies to come up with mind mapping software. And I was one of the first people to get it. And people were like, oh, this is cool. What's this? All my colleagues were just like, you know, what is this software? And I said, it's mind mapping software. I used to do it by hand before, because that's the best way to do mind maps is by hand, because you're using your tactile senses and you actually learn better from that, from writing it down. Mm-hmm. But there's electronic software right now that you can use. So I wish I could say these are the books, but the one things that I did take a look at, not just for mind mapping, the concept of mind mapping is actually very simple. Right? You use different colors, you connect different ideas, and you don't restrict yourself. That's pretty much the big thing here. And you branch off on each idea. Wherever your mind goes, it goes, because what you do is you kind of put it all on your mind map, and then you realize that there's some similarities, and you realize that there's some overlap and repetition. And then you work backwards and you say, what are the most important points here?
Yes, yeah, so the ones that repeat, or it's like I might have said dark chocolate and then just like a name brand. So it's like you pair those two together kind of thing.
Yeah, and you just keep building and you build on those ideas as far as you can go. And pretty soon, like I have mind maps that I have to put them on digital platforms now, but they're just massive. Like they're just one idea stretches to the other idea. And this is a way for us to just not restrict ourselves. Because linear thinking, if you just list something, doesn't give you that same flow.
Yeah, it's the same with the school's failure, where they teach you to regurgitate, but they don't teach you to learn.
They don't teach you how to learn. They don't teach you how to be creative, and they don't teach you how to problem solve. Those are the three things that they don't teach you that are very important when it comes to being successful.
Yes. Yeah, so on the creative aspects, are we talking like pivoting on the moment, or like generating a huge like novel, like a Lord of the Rings in your head as it's going?
Well, I'm talking about the process of creativity. So the process of creativity for an individual could be, A, you have to be in a state of being able to be creative. Okay. So, and you may have experienced this, most people have, where they've just all of a sudden, they've gotten a brilliant idea out of nowhere, right? And then, yes. And then you're like, where did this come from? Well, that's your non-conscious brain actually giving you ideas. So I started to study this after the mind mapping, because I started to study people like Leonardo da Vinci, who was an inventor, for example, mm-hmm. Einstein, and all these guys that were very prominent, you can say, figures that came up or invented something. And I just took a look at their techniques, and one of the techniques that they used was back in the day, they called it the think and pause technique, where you flood your brain with information. And then you just allow it to sit there, and you put yourself in a very low activity state, or in a no activity state, like a dark room. But then you'll start having these flashes of brilliant ideas. And that's your brain literally connecting the dots and saying, oh, this thing you read over here connects with this thing over here. Here's the concept. And I used to do this all the time as a kid. And I was just like, wow, boom. Like when you're in the shower, you'll get these in the oddest moments where you're going for a walk, you're in the shower, and all of a sudden all these ideas will come to you. That's because you're in these ideas, but they don't teach you this kind of stuff in school. Also being able to be, like, you have to be optimistic to be able to be creative.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, you cut out hard like three times. I was trying to paste everything together. It looks like it's still cutting out on you.
Oh, is it still cutting?
Yeah.
Okay. Where did I cut out?
It was the think and pause, and then it was explain the nuances of it after the walking.
Yeah, so the think and pause technique is very important, because what that does allows you to come up with ideas, or your brain to come up with ideas on its own. So you flood your brain with a whole bunch of information, and then let your brain, your non-conscious brain, actually do the work. So it will automatically connect ideas together. And your brain, you have to understand your brain, every person's brain has been designed to do two particular things based on what neuroscience research has shown. One is to be predictive, to constantly try to predict what's going to happen and how to react to that, how to conserve, how to stay safe, for example. The other one is how to solve problems. So your brain is a natural problem-solving machine. You just have to give it a problem to solve. And a lot of that stuff happens behind the scenes. So if you give it the right information, it will automatically start to solve the problems as long as you do things like remove the stress from, you know, at that period of time, because stress will kill creativity. You need to be optimistic and allow your non-conscious brain to do thinking on its own as well.
Okay, so you were talking about a creative state. I know it's not the most appropriate thing for your clientele you're going for, but would you agree light stimulus like a THC or it's not light, but enforcing yourself to stay awake to induce a type of different stress to your brain would also help with that flow?
Yeah, so this is something that has been talked about for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are chemicals that people can take that have been shown to induce certain states,
right,
and create new neural connections in the brain. I personally haven't done a lot of research in that area. I have done some, but because I don't personally believe in it and I'm not an advocate of it, I don't right. suggest that to my clients. But I have heard and seen the research that it is effective in certain areas. I've also heard that some people have abused it to a point where they have, it's just like a drug. They become addicted and it harms them more than actually helps them. So I'm always wary of those types of situations, but it has been shown to work.
Yeah. Well, I was just going because recently it's proof with like medical mushrooms. It actually releases so many neural connections within the brain.
Yeah, and LSD was designed as one of those things to enhance brain creativity and thinking. So it became another type popular drug for people, but in small doses, that's what scientists were using and testing out. So it's really interesting that, and people do it all the time, right? People do it. They have parties, Burning Man, for example. It's all about, let's see, you know, what can happen, what people can use. Push their boundaries from that perspective. There's hallucinogens that people use all around the world that have been used for centuries. And so it does impact. And in all honesty too, for me, some of my best thinking will happen after maybe a couple of drinks. You know, I don't drink a lot, but I'll have a couple of drinks. And what does that do? It actually just shuts off all of those stressful thoughts for me and allows my non-conscious brain to be able to just do what it needs to do. So a lot of the creativity that is, let's just say the creativity that is killed within us is because of stress, is because of everyday stress. So by removing that, we will automatically become more creative.
Yeah, I would agree. The times I was most creative, but then I also got addicted to it and I had to get off it was when I just had maybe one cigarette and I was just sitting and just looking around, like taking in everything. But then my personality, once I do it once, I got to do it twice. Then I got to do it four times. Then it's like, that's when I'm like, okay, calm down. But I have to agree. Just even one or two beers, just sitting, taking in nature. I have a very nice view of the hills. Thought of some crazy stories of just like, oh, like tree people talking together kind of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah. Gosh, we could keep going for hours. Do I got you for however long or do you need to go too?
Well, I am good for another 2 minutes.
Okay, well then let's wrap it up. Let's get you get anything you want to push and we'll call it there.
No, I think the biggest thing is I hope that people got value from this. If you'd like to learn more, I did write a new book that actually just came out. It's called The Complete Man. And if people, they can get a discount. If the listeners want to go to completemanaudio.com and use the promo code VICTORY75, so all one word, VICTORY, and the number, just the number 75, you'll get 75% off. And I talk about one of the chapters in there is about unlocking genius, and it's all about how to perform better and achieve more.
Awesome. Yeah, then I will I'll also follow up with your assistant and get some links for that too. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. We got to get you on in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Be more than happy to.
All right. Stay safe and stay well, my friend.
Yeah. Thanks, Josh. Take care. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So, being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? If you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome and see you next time.